Broad Street Bully Podcast, talking Flyers hockey.
Hey, what's up? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, everybody. It's episode 263 of the Broad Street Bully Podcast. How you doing? It's Drew Papsky along with Jeff and Doyle. Hope your Christmas was excellent. We hope you guys got everything you wished for and then some as we end towards the end of the year. It's our last episode of 2020, the year that was. And we have back a very special guest. We had to have him on before the season started because the guy is a treasure trove of knowledge. He knows everybody. He's basically the mayor of hockey history and more. Bruce Scoop Cooper is back joining us today, decked out with a Bernie Parent jersey, a Hershey Bears jersey, a Daryl Sittler jersey in the background, and he's graced us with his presence once again. Scoop, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed the last time, and looking forward to enjoying this one, too.
It's going to be a perfect listen for our guests that are, you know, going to be stuck at home on New Year's Eve and don't know what to do. It's like, this is story time, people. Scoop is the can wind a yarn is with the best of them with all his experience, so I'm looking forward to this again. Had to have you on before we got too far into the season and training camp, if it even happens, and everything else. So, yeah, man, like, I guess we can get right into it with you. You have, you know, we've talked about, we had you on a few weeks ago, or actually a month or so ago now. People go back and listen to that. You had so many great stories about just the players and, you know, Doc Emmerich and his rise to, like, being the hockey broadcaster. Like, you know, will never be able to be duplicated, that guy. And then we had so many stories last time. I remember I was just like listening, I was in awe, and I forgot I actually have to talk into this microphone, you know, to keep the show running. So happy to have you on here and everything, and I'm looking forward to, you know, more knowledge, because this stuff needs to be archived. Your stories, you have so much to offer with that stuff, and instead of having you write all these books about, I guess we can just have our podcast be the long-standing thing when we're all gone. Other history nerds will look at this podcast episode and be like, oh yeah, this is a history about the Flyers and hockey. So, like we said before we turn the mics on, it's nice to have a guest on that actually like can talk at length about things and not, we don't have to like pick apart your brain for, you know, for answers.
Yeah. Wants to talk and actually wants to tell stories. Cause some of those interviews, people are just like, one word answers, or we're going to lead them into a response and they're like, yeah, I agree. And you're just like, give something, like, help us out here.
Well, I can tell you a story about that. And this involves Kenny Albert. And this was when Kenny was his first job out of college. He was 22 years old and he was the broadcaster for the Baltimore Skipjacks in the American Hockey League. And this was when the Flyers still had Hershey as their farm team, but I've been involved with, you know, Hershey hockey actually almost longer than Philadelphia, back going back to the 50s. I was at a game in his first year, and it was Hershey, Baltimore Skipjacks at Hershey, and he needed an interview between periods. So Doug Yingst, who's the president and general manager of the Bears, buttonholed me and said, the new kid up there needs an interview between periods. Can you do it? And I said, yeah, sure. No problem. I have no problem doing that. So a couple of minutes ago in the period, I went up to his little broadcast booth, and he threw it back to the station to do a commercial. I went and sat down next to him. He had no idea who I was. He just knew that they sent somebody up there. So I introduced myself, told him quickly who I was. And I said, now, when you ask a question, I will talk until you indicate that you have another question. So if you only have one thing to ask me, I can talk for 7 minutes if if you need that. And I'll just keep talking until you give me the high sign that you want to say something else.
The old filibuster.
So that's exactly what I did. I think we ended up having two or three questions, but, you know, I just kept going until, you know, he came up with something else. And at the end of the interview, he thanked me. And I've worked with Kenny many times on NBC and other times in the decade since. And he never fails to mention that to me, that how I rescued him at that hockey game in his first year, by not giving one word answers, but talking as long as he needed somebody to talk, before he could think of something else to ask me.
Yeah,
it's Kenny wild Albert's to hear great. You say the new guy in reference to Kenny Alberts, because I feel like he's been around for us forever. So
I always forget he does hockey. I always remember from football growing up.
Kenny's is the son of Marv Albert and Steve Albert is his uncle. So I mean, he comes from a long stock of famous national broadcasters. But he had just graduated from college, and this was his, basically his first year. Interestingly, the head coach of the Skipjacks at the time was a guy named Robbie Laird, who was a good friend of mine, who I knew from his days playing with the Fort Wayne Comets. But his assistant coach was Barry Trotz at the time. This was Barry's first pro job. Mm. And the broadcaster and the assistant coach were roommates on the road and seatmates on the bus. So Kenny said he learned so much about hockey that year, being a roommate and bus seatmate with Barry Trotz. And I've known Barry, ever since then. So 25, 30 years, I guess.
That's amazing to me. They were roommates. I feel like you would never have that happen ever. Like you're not.
Well, this is the American Hockey League. The way it was.
Do you think it still happens now too in the American Hockey League?
Players have roommates.
I know that, but they're not going to be roommates with like a broadcaster and a coach, right? Like one that we had.
Probably not so much of that now, but it certainly was at the time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Especially knowing where they both ended up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but Kenny said, that was a marvelous year from him because he learned so much from Trotsky, who's a marvelous coach and a really terrific guy.
Well, I'm glad he learned.
And a really good friend of mine. So I always look forward to seeing him. And he's done, he won a Calder Cup in Maine. And then obviously won the Stanley Cup in Washington. Done a terrific job turning the Islanders around.
As we all saw this past summer, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, made them a very viable opponent in an all-round stacked metropolitan division, which sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Trotsky is a terrific coach.
Yeah.
And a lot of the success of the Capitals and the Islanders. And he was 14 years with the Predators too. And he made that a good team too, even though they didn't, they didn't win in the playoffs. They were still a very responsible, reasonably good team.
And they were turning out defensemen, like homegrown defensemen, like it was their job.
Yeah.
Every defenseman they had is like, all right, we'll ship them off somewhere else and like pocket that money or that pick. But I like what you said about Kenny Albert too, because that makes me respect, it makes me appreciate him more. To hear like he was a student of the game, like learning like that, because he was blessed with such a magnificent. If we all had Kenny Albert's broadcasting voice, this podcast would go through the roof. He has such a great voice for it. He's just like learning more about the game from Trotz, which is great.
Yeah, and the good thing, interesting about Kenny, compared to say Doc or the late Dave Strader, is Kenny does multiple sports. He in one week he might do a football game, a baseball game, and a hockey game.
I like when he does. I like when he does football. He's good at play-by-play. Yeah. Some guys that annoy me. I watch a lot of football, but I like Kenny Albert.
Yeah, yeah. No, so he's so he does that. Whereas Doc and Strades were basically primarily hockey as their forte.
Yeah, that's great. Barry Trotz is I respect the hell out of him as a coach. I think he's he's getting more of his fair due now for being a respected coach. Cause I think when he was in Nashville, people really didn't notice him as much, but then winning with the Capitals and they let him go, then he goes to the Islanders. I mean, he's got the resume to prove that he's the guy. And it annoys me he's still staying in the Metro because it makes it, like Jeff said, it's already stacked, and they just, I think we have a great coaching staff now with this team. And, even so, I think Trotz had the upper hand with he was be able to got out of his players during that series, obviously. And I'm over it. It's fine. The new year's starting soon, so we can put that behind us. It's the last time we're going to talk about how the Islanders beat us, hopefully.
Right.
Wait. Yeah, so last time we had you on, we were talking a little bit more about your experience. Like, you got, first of all, people didn't listen to it. This man got to drink out of the Stanley Cup. He drank beer out of the Stanley Cup, okay? So, once again, no other resume is needed for most people to, it's pretty damn cool. This guy drank out of the Stanley Cup. And you've seen it all. Like, I think last week you were telling us a little, not last week, last time you were telling us about, like, some of your experiences with the 70s Broad Street Bully era and then everything else and following into the 80s. And since we had talked to you last time, we had Brian Propp on, Flyers legend Brian Propp. Do you have any stories about the 80s Flyers? I think they're often the forgotten decade for a lot of Flyers fans because they're right after that Cup era. But Propp was great to have on. He was so genuine and, like, you know, he had some funny stories. But do you have anything about the 80s Flyers for people out there that maybe feel like they don't get their fair shake of stories?
Yeah, well, obviously I've known Popper since he was a rookie, and he was a very successful player, obviously, mm-hmm. for the Flyers, and a terrific guy. And I still see him. He's very active on Facebook, and he ends up liking a lot of the stuff that I put up. And you've seen in the last couple of weeks, I've been putting up a lot of photographs from the 70s and 80s and talking about the history of some of those players
players I've never even heard of you were talking about and putting pictures up. I was like, who the heck is that guy? And you were giving me backstory.
These are players probably before you were born.
Absolutely. I was born in 89. I was born right before the Berlin Wall went down. So that's, I just give you some perspective,
Yes. Cause I started with Flyers in 69, so this will be my 52nd year, I guess, this year.
Damn.
Although I'm not convinced that I'm actually going to see a live hockey game this season because I'm just not yet convinced that they're actually going to start. But mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons, public health and financial and logistics and a variety of things.
But one day you'll get back out there.
Oh yeah, I've been to more than 3,000 games, so I hope I'm not done quite yet. But I think I've passed the midway point.
Yeah, I would think so. Unless you're actually a vampire, that's how you have all those antiques. You've been even alive for hundreds of years. You've just been feasting.
Yeah. Well, I turned 75 in October, and so I've done 3/4 of a century so far. Yeah.
When's your birthday?
I'm Amy, October 16th.
Oh, I'm the 12th. Okay. Does that mean you're Libra too? Is that what?
I guess so.
I don't know. I'm paying attention to that stuff either, really.
I'm interested in astronomy, but not astrology.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. The 70s and 80s were a very different style of hockey. Among the things, there were no ads on the boards. There were no ads on the ice. Everybody had wooden Sherwood sticks. Virtually nobody wore hats. I always say I liked it better when the players didn't wear hats and the customers did. Because people dressed far more formally going to a hockey game, at that time.
It was like an event.
Yeah.
People used to dress up.
It's like when you see old pictures of people going on airplanes and they're like in full suits and you're like, oh, that was a time.
I was just about to say that. It was like an event. Like, you're like going out to like a formal dinner almost. You're going to get like a scotch and pinch the flight attendant on the butt or whatever they did back then. That was allowed.
It was a very different time then. And you had lines that played together long enough to get named. Because there are virtually no named lines anymore. Mm-hmm. Because if a line stays together for a couple of games, well, that's kind of amazing.
The last one I can think of is maybe the Triplets line and the Lightning like 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, but like the LCB line, Freddie put that line together and said, let's put them together and keep them together 5 years and see how they do.
Yeah.
That's basically what they did.
They did all right. Most would say they did pretty good.
Yeah, then there was the Rat Patrol, which was Kenny Linsman with Brian Propp and Paul Holmgren. And, the Crazy Eights was Mark Recchi and Brent Fedick and Lindros. Mm-hmm. And, but there virtually are no named lines anymore, like the Triple Crown line or the the gag line or the production line, you know, all those lines from the mm-hmm. from the past. This is one reason why I like to watch old timers games, because these, you know, these guys are, you know, they're in their 50s and 60s and 70s, and obviously they're not as fast as they used to be. But when you watch them, you just marvel at the skill with the passing, because everybody knows where everybody else is going to be.
Yeah, hockey's one of those sports, even at old age, if you play with people at your speed and like age level, you can kind of still play like, you know, semi-competitive. It's not as quick breakouts, but it's more of like a possession game at that point with the older guys, I think.
Yeah, and the skill with the passing and with the wrist shots and that kind of thing. It's, you know, today's game is much more chaotic, and it's and also with the free agency, players are much more like mercenaries now. They're playing for their next contract, and they don't particularly care what team it's going to be on. It's just who's going to pay them the most money.
Yeah.
Whereas you know, to me, the real quote unquote Flyers are the Flyers of the 70s and 80s, because most of those guys still live here. You know, that are retired. I mean, I see, you know, Bob Kelly at every game. He comes and sits down in the press room. We sit together for 20, 30 minutes in the press room before he goes off to do his glad handing and so forth. But I, you know, I've known Bernie for 50 years, and I see him, you know, quite often. And Joe Watson still works for the team in sales. And actually, I did an article about 10, 12 years ago, in which I went through the roster of all the players that had ever played for the Flyers and went and looked to see how many of them had come back to the team in one job or another, either as a player, as a coach or a broadcaster or some other function, at least one time. And there were over 60 of them at that time. And
yeah,
certainly more now. Some have come back 3, 4, or 5 times.
Even like
John
recent...
John Paddock's come back a number of times. Terry Murray's come back a number of times. it's, you know, there's a family connection and a loyalty.
Yeah, even with recent players, though, too. Like, I mean, like, Timonen still lives around here. I mean, like, Briere, Hartnell, like, these are like, Primo is still here. Primo, like, know, his career got cut short. He still stays around here. And like,
yeah, well, John LeClaire lives a mile from me.
Yeah. Like, and Prop, like, I mean, he went on to like play, you know, with the Bruins and everything, but he still like lives in South Jersey. Like a lot of players, Gagne, like even players that weren't necessarily like long time, like 10 plus year Flyers, they still come back and live here, which, you know, I think, like you said, speaks to the familial part of the organization. Which was the work of, you know, I guess like that's like the legacy of Ed Snyder and just the way the organization was run. And Philly's a great town. It's a good area, I guess, too. But it is interesting. Even players that didn't play here that long, still sometimes if they don't work for the team, they wind up living around here. And you run into them. Brizgalov is a great example, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, he's getting paid, you know, millions not to play.
Yeah.
That must be nice.
Yeah, so he's got a good deal here.
Yeah, I think his salary will be off the salary cap, I think, after this year. I think I was looking at it the other day. So
yeah, but you know, unless he's been spending time in Atlantic City gambling away, you know, he's got a pretty nice nest egg.
Yeah, I'd say he could be able to.
But unfortunately, a lot of players have done that. I remember Mark Howe telling me a story once that he was. I guess he was playing in an All-Star game, and Jagr was also on the same team in the All-Star game. And I don't know whether it might have been the game in Philly or New York or whatever, but it was around East Coast someplace. And he said he came into the locker room to get ready for the game, and Jagr was sitting there looking very kind of glum. And he asked him. He said, "You know, what's the matter?" And he said, "Well, I went to Atlantic City last night and I lost some money." He said, "How much?" And he said, $125,000.
Jesus Christ. That's like
I consider a $60 loss in Atlantic City bad news bears. I can only imagine.
That's like,
well, I'm
a house.
I'm not a casino person. Actually, I've only spent I've only been to a casino once, and that was in Reno with a friend of mine, and he was big on roulette. He thought that was wonderful.
I like roulette.
Yeah, so he went to the $5 table, and I went to the 50-cent table. We were both at the same tables for 2 hours, and I started with $20 and ended with $40, and he lost $6,000.
Jesus
Christ! Oh my God.
I got just as many free beers as he did. You know?
Yeah,
I bet extremely conservatively, and he was. You know, making these big bets, and then when he would win a bet, he'd give a big tip to the croupier, and you know, and then he'd lose the next one, and you know, have to go to the ATM and take a loan out from that.
So, I won like $200 playing blackjack once when I was in my early 20s, and I think I was on a cruise a couple of years ago, right after my infamous heat stroke. For the longtime listeners of the show, I put $5 on roulette I was playing the outside like blacker, but I put $5 on 28. I'm like, Claude Giroux, he's my captain. I'm putting $5 on there, and it hit. And I wound up actually making a couple $100 off it, and I bought myself a watch with it. Still love the watch. Excellent, duty free, middle of the ocean, no taxes. Watch that was marked down insanely, and when I hear losing $6,000, I'm like, Jesus Christ! I lost $100, $200 before, and I thought like I was going to cry.
Yeah, well, the only time I ever bet at a racetrack, I was actually with, I don't know whether you know, remember Gary Morrison, who played for the Flyers back in the 80s.
And, I can't say I do, unfortunately. Before my time.
Yeah, he's another good Facebook friend now. But Mo and I went down to the Brandywine Raceway, which was a harness track, which doesn't exist anymore, because Gene Hart was the announcer. Mm-hmm. For the racetrack, and so you know, we went down there and visited with Gene, and you know, while watching the horses run around, and you know, he said, "Well, let's bet on something." And he said, "Okay, well, we each put down $3 on a double, whatever it was." And he picked one horse, and I picked the other horse. And the horse I picked had Hershey in its name. That's why I picked it, because, you know, my connection with Hershey hockey. And he picked some other horse. And the race went. And, you know, I said, oh, that was nice. He said, no, I think we won. I said, oh, yes, we did. So we turned our tickets in. We got $30 back. So I made a... We split that 15 each, and so I'm $9 ahead on my horse racing betting career, and I retired.
You can buy yourself a nice little lunch and then go right home. I love it.
Yeah, so I'm $20 ahead in casino and $9 ahead at the racetrack. So I did a lot better than Len Tos.
A lot better than a lot of people, man. You hear those there's 30 for 30 ESPN stories. People that lose all their money, those athletes, they didn't know what they were doing. Yeah. People took advantage of the agents or just being frivolous with spending and gambling too.
Yeah, and better than Yager too, and so forth. But anyway, that's my entire wagering career. I've never bet on anything else, and you know, so. That's it. I'm ahead $29 in my gambling career. Yeah.
Anytime you can go plus against the house, that's a win.
Yeah.
Not nearly as storied as your hockey career, but still a win nonetheless, and still a positive, right?
but I do love the movie Casino. It's a fabulous movie.
Of course.
That and Goodfellas, you know, two of the greatest movies ever. I'm not an active participant in that.
That's okay. You can see, like you said, you get the free beers. That's what I used to do. I used to sit at like the penny slots when I was like 21. Like, you know, you got your 21. Everyone around here is like, I go to Atlantic City. You can finally gamble and drink. Yeah. And just sit there and milk them for like free drinks.
Now you can go down there and bid on the auction to blow up the Trump Plaza.
Oh, yeah?
the mayor of Atlantic City is holding an auction to be the person to push the button to blow up Trump Plaza in February, and the money's going to go to the Boys Club.
Oh, yeah.
They need it, because I just drove through Atlantic City, and it's been bleak without the casinos at full capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's you know, Mr. Trump went there and ruined three of them.
I did a comedy show at one of the last comedy shows probably there at the Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
Right before it got rebranded as something else now, I think. I don't even know what's going on over there, but
yeah, no, I mean it's you know, he lost $1 billion of other people's money in that and then used that as a tax write off for 20 years, even though it was none of his money, so it was a bit of a grifter there too.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of great businessmen, we didn't hear much about Ed Snyder. We always got, the later stories of Ed Snyder about how everybody revered an owner, and how he became this, like, kind of bigger than life here in Flyers history. But in the beginning, I mean, you knew Ed Snyder back in the 70s. Like, was he always the kind of person you saw, like, towards the end of his life where everybody was Mr. Snyder? He was the head of the organization. He was always involved. And I'm just curious to see if he was always that kind of hands-on guy.
Well, he was. I'll tell you my favorite Ed Snyder story. He was a very driven businessman. He actually started with his wife's money for his first wife, Myrna, because he grew up relatively poor in Washington D.C. and he was a record salesman. And then got involved with the Eagles and, you know, and then involved with the Flyers and so forth. But my general rule of thumb is if Ed Snyder's said hello to me more than three times in the season, I started getting nervous because he was noticing me too much.
Yeah.
But my favorite Ed Snyder story, this was back in the 70s and 80s. And when I was sort of a contract writer for the Flyers, and I wrote a whole, they used to have 16 live pages in the program. So I had a full page column in the back page called Scoop with my picture and a logo on it. But I ghost wrote a column for Bernie Perrin. I ghost wrote one for Pat Quinn. I wrote a lot of game stories and or historical stories. One year on the 25th anniversary, I did a 48 part series on the history of the team up until that time. And, you know, so I did a lot of writing for that. But one of the projects they had me do was for the 1980-81 season, which was the season right after the 35 game winning streak and then losing to the Islanders in the finals. They published a magazine size yearbook for fans. That wasn't the media guide, but this was a yearbook with each player had a two-page spread with a big picture and a little blurb about him. And obviously Ed Snyder had to have something written about him too. So I went down in the summer and spent an hour with Ed in his office interviewing him for the piece that I was going to write about him. And the thing was not going to be published until about a month into the season. So I was first game of the season was opening night was against Vancouver, which was not a very good team at the time. And it happened to be on my 35th birthday, which was October 16th, 1980. So I had written my piece and turned it in and didn't give any more thought about it. So as I was walking into the Spectrum and walking around the corridor that down at ice level, which goes past the Flyers offices, as I walked past the office, the receptionist signaled to me and said, "There's a phone call for you." I said, what do you mean there's a phone call for me? They said, "It's a phone call for you. It's from Mr. Snyder. He's in his limousine. He wants to talk to you." Uh-huh. So I got really nervous. So I went in there and she handed me the phone and he says, "I read that piece that you wrote about me. It's all wrong. I want you to wait there and I'm going to see you and I'm going to talk to you when I get there. So sit down and wait for me." And I said, "Okay." And
were you like crapping your pants?
I was puzzled because I knew the piece that I had written was exactly what we had talked about, and I knew it was fine. Fortunately, I had a copy of it with me. So while I was waiting for Ed to show up, I asked, said, what did you give him? And so they handed me a copy of the story that they gave him, and I read it, and it's not the story that I, it's not the piece that I wrote. It was all different, and it was terrible. So Ed arrives and takes me into the director's lounge, which was this, you know, kind of nice lounge right next to the office. And I said, Mr. Snyder, I understand that this is, and I hand him the thing, is this what you were shown? And he said, yes. And I said, well, that's not what I wrote. This is what I wrote. And I handed him the piece that I wrote. And he read through it and he said, this is perfect. Why aren't they using this one? And I said, I don't know, but it wasn't me.
It's the editors, man. They always ruin everything.
Yeah. Somebody changed it. And he said, well, don't worry about it. You did perfectly fine. Your story is perfect. And I will take care of this. And I said, oh, well, thank you, you know, because I was getting really nervous. And today's my birthday. And he said, it's your birthday. He says, well, you're not going down to the press room for dinner. You're going to have dinner with us right in here. This is going to be your birthday dinner. And he sat me down at a table, and his bodyguard and driver was a man named John Foreman, who was about 6'6" and weighed 300 pounds and was very, very imposing. And he says, John, give this man a martini. And so John gave me a martini, which was extremely strong. I was still very nervous, so I had a second one. And I don't remember a goddamn thing about the game. I went back to the press box, and the game just was a blur to me. Now, I know the Flyers lost to Vancouver, and so I didn't go see Ed after the game because, you know, he was not very happy when they lost, especially to a bad team coming off the 35-game winning streak.
Uh-huh.
But that was my 35th birthday dinner at the as a guest of Ed Snyder in the director's lounge at the Spectrum.
Yeah.
And the publication came out the next month, and it was, you know, they had my story in there, and it was fine.
Well, all of that ends well. Before we started recording, you mentioned the Bernie Parent jersey you have behind you. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you came to acquire? There's a story behind the jersey and how you came to acquire it. I think people would be interested to hear about that.
Yeah, well, Bernie's career was ended in February 1979. It was an afternoon game against the Rangers at the Spectrum. And Donnie Maloney, who's another good friend of mine now, he's now an executive with Calgary Flames, but there was then playing for the Rangers. He got tangled up in front of the net with, I think, Jimmy Watson. I'm not sure who it was. But anyway, he fell down, and the toe of his stick went through the eye hole on Bernie's mask and hit him in the eye, and it ended up with a career-ending eye injury. So he came off, you know, he came off the ice and so forth. Now the next season, the program, which I said was 16 live pages, but had a lot of other material in that. The day before the first preseason game, the program wasn't done yet. And so Bob Butera, who was at that time the president of the Flyers, called me up and he says, can you come in and rescue the program? You know, we need somebody right now to come in and fix it. So I did that. And I said, my fee will be $500. And a Bernie Parent jersey. And he said, is that all? I said, yeah, I think I could do that. It's, you know, it's a day's work, and that's easy for me to do that. And so I went in there and did that, and the program came out for the first game, and everything was fine. And they gave me an extra $500 check, and gave me this jersey, which was the jersey he wore in that last game.
Yeah, I was wondering if you got it off like an auction or something like that. I wasn't sure because
nope.
I know you collect a lot of artifacts from all kinds of history, not just Flyers. I wondered if you were someone like that if you're hawking some auction items or whatever?
No. All the jerseys I have, I have four Russian jerseys which I got on eBay. Uh-huh. You know, like this here. This is one of them here. You can see. This was actually a guy that the Flyers drafted, but he never came over. Zolotov was his name.
Oh wow!
I remember that name.
Yeah, and these are all jerseys from the '80s and '90s, when the Russian Elite League.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I found these on eBay, and you know, I just wanted to do Russian jerseys, but all the other jerseys I have were either given to me by the players or by trainers or by the team. I never bought any of them.
Oh wow,
interesting.
That's
so
very cool.
You got a lot. You have a pretty good collection. I've seen you post on Facebook before. You had a you have one that Doc Emmerich sent you or something like that, or
no? Actually, I lent during the playoffs. Doc did all of his playoff games.
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
A studio they set up in his basement, and for each game, he hung a different minor league jersey on the wall behind him. And the reason he did that is, well, Doc has, you know, spent 7 years working in the minor leagues before he got to the NHL.
Yeah, when you gave his whole story last time, it was pretty interesting to hear how his rise.
Right. He spent 4 years with the Port Huron Flags and 3 years with the Maine Mariners before he came up in 1980, and he was up for the rest of the next 40 years. But he still has a great respect for minor hockey. Mm-hmm. And so since most of those leagues all closed down, you know, those leagues all closed down and none of them had playoffs last year, he decided that he would hang up a different jersey from various different minor league teams on the wall behind him, just as sort of for his little opening shot before the game started, as a to honor and give some recognition to those leagues that couldn't do playoffs this mm-hmm. year. And he asked to borrow a jersey I had that belonged to Gordy Brooks, who was I was the PR man for the Firebirds back in the 70s. And Gordy was our star player. In fact, he actually won the American Hockey League scoring title in 1 year. And Gordy and I became extremely close friends, even though the last time I saw him was in 1979, I guess. But he retired from hockey, went back and lived in London, Ontario, where he played junior hockey with the London Knights. He had actually been a line mate with Daryl Sittler, and worked for 35 years for London Hydro. And and then retired, but he would still call me every 2 or 3 years. He would just call me out of the blue just to say hello and and catch up with me, because he was a the lower one there is the Firebirds jersey.
And that's
the jersey he wore the year that he won the scoring title, American League scoring title. And so out of the blue, he just gave it to me, because he said that I was a really good friend, and he was really generous, and he wanted me to have that. So it's been very precious to me ever since then. And unfortunately, last October 1st, he died suddenly of a heart attack.
Oh, jeez.
And he was only 70 years old. The last time I talked to him was about a year ago, I guess, or maybe a little longer, and he told me that he'd stopped playing pickup hockey, because he had played hockey for years after that, just in a beer league kind of hockey, but he'd stopped it because he had a heart attack a couple years ago.
Jeez.
And so obviously I couldn't go to his funeral, but his funeral was streamed live from London, Ontario. So I sort of attended the funeral that way, and I kept in touch with his children and his widow.
Yeah, it's crazy how live streaming funerals now.
Yeah, but I there is an interesting Gordy story. I may have told this the last time, but let me tell it again this time. As I would say, Gordy would call me just out of the blue every once in a while. So this was in the early 80s, I guess. And I was at home on the afternoon, and the phone rang, and I picked it up. And the voice said, Scoop, it's Gordy. Well, I assumed, well, it's Gordy Brooks. And the next thing he said is, how's Mark doing? And I said, oh, it's not Gordy Brooks, it's Gordy Howe. So, and Gordy was still up in Hartford at the time, and Mark was playing here. And, you know, he just, we'd been friends, you know, for years, and he just called up and said, hey, you know, how's Mark doing? What's going on down there? Just wanted to chat. And so we talked for about 15, 20 minutes, and that was it.
I think you did tell it last time, but that's still, like, just great to think that you got to speak to one of the greats, like, you know, like, just call you casual conversation.
Yeah, and I saw Gordy right up to, you know, last time I saw him was, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago, because after Colleen, his wife, died, Gordy would spend time with his four children, Mark and Marty and Murray, who's the physician in Toledo, and Kathy, his daughter, lives in Texas. And, he would spend 2 or 3 months with each one and then sort of move on to the next one. And so when he was staying with Mark, Mark comes to the Flyers quite often because he's the chief pro scout for Detroit Red Wings. And so he would, if Gordy was staying with him, he would bring Gordy along, and Gordy would come and sit in the press box, and we'd hobnob in the press room beforehand or between periods or whatever. They're always extremely gracious and as humble as could be, but you wouldn't want to play against him.
Yeah.
You know, he was not humble on the ice, but off the ice he was, and Mark is the same way. You know, these are as humble and generous people as you'd ever want to meet. And Mark is, you know, I see Mark during the course of the season. I may see him 15 times in the season. He may come to as many as 15 games. And every time he comes, we either sit together in the press room for half an hour, or I visit him between periods or before the game up in the press box. And he is by far my best source of information about other players and other teams and whatever, any player I might be wanting to get a read on. You know, I just ask him, and he will give me everything there is to know about this guy, good, bad, or indifferent. And he always does it extremely professionally. Never, is catty or anything like that. He just tells me exactly what he thinks. And if there's something wrong, he tells me, especially about his own team. You know, that some of the things he told me about Mike Babcock when he was coaching there, or some of the players there. You know, last time I saw Mark was at a game, last game I went to in March. And, I was asking him about what are the prospects for the Red Wings. And he says it's probably going to be 3 years before they make the playoffs again, because they're just that thin right now.
Which is crazy, because growing up, like, the Red Wings were, I mean, the Flyers were, when we were growing up, the Flyers were pretty much, like, for a long run, like, making the playoffs every year. But the Red Wings were just, they never missed the playoffs. And then now we've seen,
yeah,
like,
but you know, and I remember, you know, long stretches. Yeah, but I remember long stretches where Detroit were dead last, and then where Pittsburgh was dead last, and Chicago was dead last.
They had long droughts,
yeah. The Kings were dead last. The Capitals were dead last. You know, that's always the way it is. And the remarkable thing is that the Flyers have, even though they've only won two cups, and that was in 74 and 75, they've still been to the finals 8 times.
Yep.
And if you actually look at the winning percentages for all of the active teams in the NHL right now, Canadiens are first. Las Vegas is second because they had that spectacular first year, so they haven't been around very long. But the Flyers are third.
The Flyers were second. Okay. So Las Vegas beat them now, I guess, because they're short.
Because they've only been in the league, you know, a couple of years now, and they've had a couple of really good years. Haven't had any bad ones yet.
They will.
So they will. But if you leave them out, it's the Canadians first and the Flyers second, and the Flyers are second by about 20 points over Boston.
Yeah.
So they, their consistency, they had one stretch in the early 80s where they missed the playoffs for 5 years in a row. But the other than that, they've been pretty good. They've been always been competitive.
Yeah, they have in my lifetime. I started watching them in their early to mid 90s. Like from that point on, the Lindros era, they were in it all the time, And when they went to that cup run in 97 to lose to the Red Wings and get swept by that dream team of Russian nationals, they were always in it. And I thought, as a little kid, I thought the Flyers were going to win every year. I'm like, this is the year they're going to do it. They're going to beat Hasek again. He's going to stand on his head for a couple of games. We'll beat him in a 6-game series. And then they always lost, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I got to drink from the cup in the Spectrum locker room on May 19th, 1974. And I said, yeah, it's great. I guess I'm going to do this every year. Well, that doesn't sense.
It was a good thought, though.
I have drunk from the Calder Cup in the interim, though.
That's good, yeah. I think they're on their way to, getting back to, being a contender again. And we'll see what they can do, in the upcoming seasons with the players they got. But it's exciting. We were talking with Bill Meltzer about this in our last episode, how good the depth is on the team right now as far as forwards go and some prospects and everything. Yeah. So I'm hoping they can make the next jump, as they've improved since last year's was a huge improvement. I'm hoping they could do it even
Flyers have done very well in the draft over the years because they've had really good, really good scouts.
Which we could
but
say.
They've also done They've also done extremely well signing free agents.
Yes, not overspending.
Tim Kerr was a free agent, undrafted. Dave Poulin was a free agent. He was playing in Sweden. Bob Froese was a free agent or the goalie. I mean, they've done very well with finding free agents because they've been very serious about their scouting and their amateur scouting and pro scouting. And they have not skimped on that. This is one thing I always say about Buffalo. But Buffalo basically decimated their pro scouting ranks. They only have one or two now. I mean, they have lots of amateur scouts, but their pro scouting is virtually nothing. And they do all of that by video. And that's foolhardy. That's because you learn so much more by being at the game, talking to other scouts, watching the warm-up, watching the players on the bench when they're not on the ice. There's so many more things to see, to evaluate a player than you can see on video.
Yeah, like the intangible stuff that analytics won't show you. Their candor is, what kind of motivation, a team player, work ethic, things like that, yeah.
Yeah, and the money that Buffalo or a team like that would save in not having pro scouts, all they have just to make one bad trade, and it's cost them more than the money that they've saved.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had to cut some salary to still pay Ville Leino for his big contract they gave him. Which I don't think we talked about this. His clothing line's now in the NHL game this year or something like that. We talked about his clothing line in the video game. I think they have some of his clothes available to wear in the one mode where you can dress up your player, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, because I remember he launched that company like a couple of years ago. It's called Billy Bano. It's a clothing company. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but one thing that I always try to watch carefully is the warm-up, and I watch carefully what the players are doing on the bench when they're not on the ice.
Like if they're, loose from what they're doing, how they're approaching the getting ready for the game.
Yeah, no, during the course of the game, whether they're in it, they're paying attention, what their attitude is, what their body language is, all of that tells you a lot.
Yeah.
And Mark Howe is probably one of the best people at reading that. And that's why I always talk to Howie about stuff. Because he is, spending 20, 30 minutes talking to Howie about that is it's worth thousands of dollars.
Did he have any insight from the current Flyers prospects? Did he have anything to say about that? What's the scoop on that?
Yeah, he likes some of the kids down in Lehigh Valley because he goes there a lot. But he said that they're, you know, they're probably a year or two away.
Okay.
You know, there's some big kids down there. Radcliffe, I think, is one of them. He likes him, but he says he's not ready yet.
He's huge. His wingspan is like a goddamn, like huge eagle. Like, I remember when I saw him at the rookie camp I went to a day of, and just seeing him wind up on a slap shot, like how much torque he gets on his body. He's huge.
Right.
He was so lanky back then. But he's put on a lot of muscle, I think, since then, too.
Yeah. But, you know, I haven't talked to Howie, since March. And, you know, things have changed drastically since then because, you know, basically there's not going to be an AHL season. I'm not convinced there's going to be an NHL season. All the, you know, the ECHL is trying to have a season with about half their teams have opted out. Uh-huh. The Southern Professional League, you know, a whole bunch of other leagues are just not playing at all.
Yeah.
It should be very interesting this year to see the draft because you figure like these teams are stockpiling picks, you know, like these bad teams are stockpiling picks to kind of build out their teams. And now they don't have junior seasons. They don't have any AHL season. Yeah. And like, how do you assess talent and how do you burn all these picks off when you're not seeing any flavor?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Ontario League is going to try to play a junior season, but they've been ordered by the Ontario government that they're not allowed to be hitting.
Oh, well, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how are you going to play like that?
Forceful hugging.
You know, there might as well be, you know, the World Juniors are going to be played in a bubble in Edmonton, but, you know, who knows what that's going to be.
I saw that, and I was reading that they just basically co-opted the NHL bubble to do the World Junior Tournament.
Yeah, but, right, yeah, but who, you know, what are you going to learn from it, you know? Probably not much.
I don't know. No hitting. Like, it's not going to. Then it's like an all-star game, pretty much. And you don't really get much out of an all-star game.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, you know, but the worst thing that the NHL did was they got rid of the old-timers game for the all-star weekend. Because that's the only game I was interested in watching.
Yeah, that would actually be fun to watch. Not like they have.
Yeah.
The all-star game kind of sucks. Yeah. I mean, that skills competition is the only, like, really thing I enjoy watching anymore.
Yeah.
The skills competition, though, last year I DVR'd it because I couldn't watch it live. And between commercials and talking segments, there was like 20 minutes of actual skills in a two-hour production.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I mean, the All-Star Weekend is basically a thing for to schmooze sponsors. Now, that's basically what it's for
little kids, I guess, to go if they're in that city.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a thing for the NHL teams and the NHL to bring in their sponsors and, you know, schmooze them and give them a good weekend or whatever. But it's from a hockey standpoint, it's not much.
Yeah. But, we're getting close to the end of the show here, Scoop. Do you got any other wrap up with one other good story for the new year? This is the last episode of the year, so we're happy to have you on here. But you got any other anything? I'm not going to put on the spot here.
I don't know. Give me a topic, and I'll see if I can come up with something.
Doyle, Jeff, any ideas?
Do you have any interactions with Wayne Gretzky?
Oh, yeah,
I've had a few, but when he played in Los Angeles, because I used to go to Los Angeles a lot, when the Flyers always went on the road between Christmas and New Year's because the ice show came in.
Yep.
And so there would be, and the Flyers almost always played a game in Los Angeles during that road trip. And my sister and brother-in-law lived in Los Angeles until 1994, until the earthquake, and they moved back here. So I would go out to Los Angeles for 2 weeks every winter when they were away, and would see a lot of Kings games, and see Gretzky and so forth. So my personal interactions with him are not a lot, but I saw him a lot. Also saw him a lot when he played with Edmonton, especially in the playoffs and so forth. And have, you know, talked with him a few times, but it's that's pretty much it with Gretzky, because he always played in the West until the end, whether he was with the Rangers, and you know that was right at the end of his career. And the Rangers were not very good at the time. Although, actually, I was walking in the hallway past the past the locker rooms before a game, and for some reason he ran out of the dressing room, you know, looking for something, and he came within a whisker of knocking me down, and so he was very apologetic for that.
Always is nice. The great one is also, you know, a nice one.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, he's like, you know, he's like all hockey. You know, the number of jerks that I've known in hockey, I've known thousands of hockey people, or I could count on maybe half of one hand. There have been a couple, but very, very few.
Yeah, that's the impression I get from what I keep hearing. Just, you know, everything else.
You know,
it's not like,
you know, and I know lots of Hall of Famers. Actually, a year ago September, I spent a week in Toronto, going to a wedding of one of the guys that I've been mentoring for 13 years. And I have another one of my guys worked at the Hall of Fame. So we spent a full day at the Hall of Fame. And it was during when the Gretzky Howe exhibit was up. And so it's all of, actually, you can see here, I've got those are the street banners.
Oh, okay.
From,
yeah,
the Gretzky and Howe exhibit.
Oh, wow.
Which for some reason the Hall of Fame decided to sell, and so I said, "Great!
Your house is like a museum."
Yeah.
For the listeners that are listening, he's just panning over to showing these huge amounts of just like memorabilia hanging on the walls and shelves, and he has this big Howe and Gretzky banners that were hanging on the street back then for the exhibit.
Yeah, and you know that exhibit is still there, although the hall is closed right now. But these were on. They hung on the light poles all around Toronto.
Yeah,
they're about, you know, 6 feet high and three across, and you know, they're beautiful, and they were, you know, Hall of Fame was sell. They had only, I think they only had 100 of them, and they was, you know, and they were selling them. So I said, you know, $90, $95 a piece or something, which was, you know, for something like that seemed to me to be spectacular.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, but it's, but you know, I went into the Great Hall where the cup is and where all the trophies are and where all the little plaques are of all the people in the Hall of Fame. So I walked around and looked at all the plaques and I said, you know, I know about half of these guys, not quite half of them, you know, but I know probably about 40 of them.
Wow.
You know, they were all, you know, all friends of mine. A lot of them I know as scouts or as players or coaches or broadcasters or, you know, or whatever, but they're, you know, these guys, even the Hall of Famers are just ordinary guys, and they, you know, they treat everybody equally. It's a very egalitarian sport, and the thing about it is that you know, people with fat heads don't last in it very long, because it's the humility is highly prized, because on any given night, the greatest player could be the GOAT and the humblest player could be the star.
Yeah. It's a true team
and
sport.
So, you know, and so, you know, the people that are arrogant, just don't last very long.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe it. My dad plays league, and while it's not the NHL, he would come home some nights and say, yeah, they turned on that quickly. You would just know, you know.
Yeah,
you make the save, everyone loved you. You don't make the save, you're the worst thing that's ever happened to the team. A little bit of Charlie Conway.
Yeah, they love you win or tie, and don't tie too often.
My old football coach used to say a tie is like kissing your sister.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you got to kiss a girl, but it's still your sister.
But still, you know, being involved in this for more than half a century has been glorious. And the people that I've met through hockey, or, you know, many of my best friends, and it's been a very rich life for me.
It seems you've met a lot of great people through just your experience, just working and living your life and having a career. And it's amazing. Yeah. You're like an encyclopedia when you start rattling off the person you met, and you tell me all about their grandkids and where they work and they live. I mean, you got that absorption kind of brain. I guess it's for your love of history. It makes sense, because you just, like, you have all this information. I wonder how you store it. You have like a Dewey Decimal System in your head. You have all this information.
Yeah, well,
it's crazy.
No, it's just all there, and it's just remembering it, because, you know, hockey players are, you know, they're great athletes, but they're also people.
Of course.
And that's and that's how I treat them as people. So I know their families and their children and their likes and their other things. You know, I have a theory that I explained to all of the guys that I mentor. It's called the hot button theory. And the hot button theory is everybody's got hot buttons that are something other than their profession. And so when you go to work someplace or you're going to school someplace or whatever, find out the hot buttons of the people that you work with, and especially the people you work for. And if, you know, if your boss is a great fishing nut or loves 17th century Chinese porcelain or, you know, whatever it is, find out what they're interested in, learn something about it, and talk to them about it. Because, you know, you may come up to be a time where there's 10 people that are in line for one promotion, and the guy that you've talked to about 17th century Chinese porcelain is the guy making the decision. Uh-huh. Who do you think has got the inside job, you know, the inside post to get the job?
Yeah, because
you've treated them as a person that has interests, and you've talked to them about their interests. And the other thing is, you know, those become your interests too. You know, I say that I'm 75 and I still learn new things every day. And when I go to Maine in the summer, I go up to Belfast and Searsport, which is halfway up the coast, and has lots of flea markets. And so I go to the flea markets every weekend, and I'm always looking for something that I don't know what it is or that just speaks to me. And it may be something that costs 25 cents, but it may open a completely new level or area of interest to me, just to research and find out what it is and where it came from and something about its history. You know, that, to me, that's the great joy of that kind of thing. You know, and so when I go into an antique shop, people say, the owner says, "Well, what are you looking for?" And my answer is, "I'm looking for something that you have, but I don't know what it is yet."
Yeah,
I'll walk around, and something will speak to me, you know, and that's my joy there for the next week. I spend the next week researching this or learning about it, and you know. One of the great things are old letters and finding old letters. And I'll end with this, even though this is not hockey related, but it's one of my favorite stories. And this, I bought an old letter, which was a stampless cover, because stamps were not issued in the United States until 1847. And this was a letter written in 1832. It was mailed in Philadelphia. And what was a philatelic interest on it was a stamp on the front that said Liverpool ship letter, and that's what stamp collectors were interested in. They didn't care about the letter, but I was interested in the letter. I paid, I think, $35 for this letter.
Uh-huh.
And it was written by a man named Charles Cartling, who was from Burslem in England, and he was in the United States to sell Wedgwood china, because that's where it was made. And he was writing this letter from Philadelphia. It was mailed in Philadelphia in September of 1832 to another friend of his back in Burslem, who was also in the same business. And he was describing what America was like. Now, Cartling was also a lay preacher. And so he writes about first going to Boston, then coming to Philadelphia and preaching at the women's penitentiary in Philadelphia, then going to Washington and teaching a religious class, and one of the people in the class was Chief Justice John Marshall.
And then he was invited
to the Executive Mansion, which is now the White House, for tea by Andrew Jackson, and he writes about that. He writes about visiting Virginia and seeing slavery there, and he writes about the difference between the heavy almost caste system in England compared to the much more open system in the United States, where he said I was teaching a religious class that had Chief Justice John Marshall and a janitor in it, and they treated each other as equals.
Yeah.
And this letter is written in such gorgeous prose.
I'm sure the penmanship was excellent too, huh?
Oh yeah, the penmanship was, but the description was just, you know, was just absolutely gorgeous. It could have been written by any great writer of the 19th century. And it was just a letter from one friend to another describing what it was, you know, what America was like in 1832. And it probably not been read by anybody else since 1832. I was probably the first person to read it.
Yeah,
so I transcribed it and I annotated it and I put it up on my private webpage. And I'll send you the link to it because as a history nerd, I think you will find this fascinating. And it's something that you can use with your history class.
Yeah, this is all for me right now. Like, I'm just like nerding out. People listening to a show are like, all right, Drew, we get it. You like history. But I love hearing this. Yeah. Because I've worked in antique shops. I've actually read letters from the Civil War, like multiple ones from the same estate.
Oh, yeah. No,
and you read
them
and you put together the guy's story, you know? You kind of like learn about like who they were and what they were like. And with the internet now, you can kind of almost track down where they ended up and everything. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Civil War, it was the first war fought by literate armies that wrote home. And I have a fascinating Civil War letter written by a man who escaped from a Confederate prison. And writing home, he was from the Ohio Volunteer Infantry.
Okay.
Which is what and there is a hockey connection because that's what the Blue Jackets are. It's named after the Ohio Volunteer. That's why they shoot off a cannon when they score a goal. Actually, there is one other team in the NHL that is named after the Civil War. And do you know what that team is?
Probably not the Florida Panthers.
No. I'll give you a clue. They play in Canada.
Is it
Well, it's probably not the Jets.
Is it the Oilers?
Nope.
I don't know.
It's the Calgary Flames because they were originally the Atlanta Flames.
Ah, that makes sense.
And Atlanta was burned by Sherman.
Yep.
And that's what they were named after.
It was Hotlanta.
Named after it. Yeah.
Oh my God, what a morbid name. I guess I never put together Sherman's Arch in the Atlanta Flames. But now that you say that, why would you name the hockey team after the raising of a town?
I never did either, but I never put that two together either. But yeah, when Sherman burned all that to the ground, why would you name it after that?
Well, I know I'm sure you've all seen Gone with the Wind, but there's the Butterfly McQueen, the maid to Olivia de Havilland, wherever, I can't remember. What her character is,
but Scarlet or she, whatever.
Scarlet's cousin.
Okay.
And Butterfly McQueen runs into the house and says, "Atlanta's burning! Atlanta's burning!"
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what the Calgary Flames are named after because they were originally the Atlanta Flames.
Learn something new every day. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Scoop. We're gonna have to shut the show. You and me are gonna talk about history for another 3 hours if we let this go. But I want to thank you again for coming on. Your presence always appreciated and everything. And thanks for helping us wrap up this weird year on our show and everything else. And you know, we hope you're healthy and have a great new year. And all our listeners out there, thank you so much for you know, all the support this year. We did a lot of live streaming this year. We had a lot of great. Feedback from you guys, and if you want to help us out and you have some extra time over winter break and you know, you're taking some time off, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We appreciate it, people. And Scoop, thanks again for joining us, and our listeners out there, have a wonderful new year, and hopefully we're talking back to normal in Flyers hockey very soon.
All right, and I'll send you a link to that 1832 letter. I think you'll find it fascinating and something you can use in your history classes.
Absolutely. All right.
Yes. Yeah.
Scoop, you know, Scoop's the man. Go check out his website and everything. What's the URL again? Where can they find you before we get
off the tunnel? HockeyScoop.net is my hockey history website.
HockeyScoop.net for hockey history, and then, of course, for more if you want to get more into his history stuff. Thanks again, Scoop. Guys, go Flyers.
This has been the Broad Street Bully Podcast with your hosts, Drew Papsky, Jeff, and Doyle. Available anywhere you get your podcasts. Check out BroadStreetBully.net for the latest episodes and daily content about the Philadelphia Flyers. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at the BSB Podcast.
Yeah, da 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 da.